Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Today is our annual Smart Talk program devoted to books, especially books that would make nice and thoughtful gifts during the holiday season. If you've never heard this particular program before, here's how it works. We've assembled a small panel that will recommend books for gift giving or a book maybe that you would like to read. We'd also like to hear from you, questions about a particular book, genre, or author, or hear books that you've read recently that you would recommend to others. Joining us on today's program, Catherine Lawrence, co-owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, Travis Karowski, assistant professor of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania, and Carolyn Blatchley, executive director of the Cumberland County Library System. If you could recommend one particular book on your list, all three of you have made lists, and you can see that list on our website, WITF.org. If you could name one book or recommend one book on your list as a gift, which one would it be? And let me start with you, Catherine Lawrence.
Great. Thanks, Scott. It's wonderful to be here. Happy holidays. We're looking forward to this early book chat because, yes, supply chain says do your holiday shopping early. For one book, this is tough because I have a list of, I think, 15.
It's like picking your favorite kid, right?
A single one. Kate Bear's Book of Poetry, her second book out, I Hope This Finds You Well. And she's a central Pennsylvania writer who's hit number one New York Times bestselling list for her poetry. And what I really like about it is how she finds beauty out of pain and challenges. And this particular book is erasure poems created from notes she received online and elsewhere in response to her first book. So there's this interesting conversation going on in which she takes online detractors and supporters and turns them into new poetry. And I think this is a wonderful way to express how, you know, we take what we come with in life and what comes to us and transform it into something beautiful for the holidays to give as a gift. That's my pick for you.
Well, Kate Bear has been on our program before. I know she's done a number of events with Midtown Scholar. And she's one of America's most talented poets. And I see that she participates in a lot of events around the country, but proud to call her a Central Pennsylvanian. So Kate Bear is a lady for Catherine. Travis Karowski, Dr. Travis Karowski, how about you? One book that you could choose.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me. And I would definitely back up to Kate Bear's choice. It's a wonderful book. I'm with Catherine, and I'm trying to choose one book as a gift. Is hard. I made this list. I hope listeners can check it out. It's got anywhere between kind of 15 and 50 books on it, where I was trying to make a diverse offerings of people for, you know, gifts that they're thinking of for diverse people in their lives. But if I had to choose one, I'm going to choose two. I'm going to grab one from Catherine's list, which is a great list. You should check that list out too. And it's a novel I actually recently just finished reading. It's called Clara and the Sun, which I mentioned actually back when we were on the show, I think like 6 months ago. It's a new novel from Nobel laureate Kazuo Ishiguro, and it's about AI, it's about love, it's about birth, it's about breaking down our kind of conscious habits of the way we kind of think life works and life functions and the love works and love functions. It's poetry in the shape of a novel. It's one of the best reading experiences I've ever had in my life. So I definitely would check out Clara and the Sun. It's going to be on lots of lists. It's going to be all over the bookstores, even with the crunch that we're having in supply chains. But one from my list that I will check out, that I hope you'll check out and maybe gift to people and look yourself at reading, is Ann Patchett, novelist of probably a dozen or just under a dozen novels. Her most well-known novels are Bel Canto and State of Wonder, and she also has recently Commonwealth and The Dutch House. I actually got to know Ann Patchett's work from her work in nonfiction about her relationship with the two soon deceased nonfiction writer, memoirist, Lucy Greeley, their close friendship, both when they were at the University of Iowa and after when they were starting to publish their early works called Truth and Beauty. It's a beautiful book. I've definitely checked it out. This is another, I think, her third, Ann Patchett's third book of nonfiction called These Precious Days. I think it's actually out tomorrow in bookstores. Cool. It's a collection of nonfiction essays about different things, about love and loss and life. One about becoming close to Tom Hanks' personal assistant. But the one that really kind of caught my heart that I've already shared with a lot of people is an essay called My Three Fathers, where Ann Patchett writes about the three different father figures in her life, a biological father, and then two different stepfathers. And they've all since passed away. And she has this massive essay about being a writer, about being a daughter, about what fathers mean in the world and to life. I pass it along to my own stepdaughter. I pass it along to my own mother, and they both pass it along to other people. It's a heartbreakingly lovely essay. And this woman, who's one of the best novelists working today, is also, it seems like, one of the top nonfiction authors working. And I think it's a book that'll make a lot of people happy and be gifted a lot this holiday season. So that'll be These Precious Days by Ann Patchett.
That sounds great. And that does sound like a great gift, Travis. Carolyn Blatchley, your recommendation on your list, the one book that if you could gift, what would it be?
Thank you for having me here today. As a librarian, it's kind of expected that I will be able to recommend books as gifts.
I would hope so.
I purchase books as gifts, so this is always a fun show for me. And a couple of years back, my sister gifted me Atlas Obscura, and I was thrilled to see the website Gastro Obscura turn into a book, Gastro Obscura, A Food Adventurer's Guide. And I think it's one that I would really recommend as a gift. It's about food in relation to culture and people, history, with random food facts. It's got, they're just short entries that are organized by the continent from which they come. So all the continents are represented, including Antarctica, and they highlight notable national and regional dishes and their origin. So unique food items, restaurants, food-related cultural institutions, and each entry has like a how to try it, a guidance for finding the dish, maybe online or in that place, or how to make it at home. And then it's sprinkled with all kinds of narratives, sidebars with additional information. So it's the kind of book that you can savor it in small servings. You can just pick it up and, read it for a little bit and then put it back down. I think someone described it as a long multi-course meal. So it's a pleasure for armchair travelers or people who love to travel the world and eat tasty things. Of course, I was intrigued. I'm a brewery traveler myself. So I was interested in the Chilean beer, where brewers trap fog and use that fog as the moisture, as the water, to create their beers. They're Egypt's 2,000-year-old egg ovens. My dad's a chemist and used to make 1,000-year-old eggs for us. So I'm curious about that one next time I can get to Egypt. A vending machine in Texas that dispenses full-size pecan pies. How appropriate for Thanksgiving and the holidays coming up. So it's just a neat way to read about the history, the culture, the travel and the festivals around food. And that excites me as something to read and also to share.
It is, now I'm curious, Carolyn, you mentioned Atlas Obscura. Is it laid out, is the book laid out the same way?
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of color.
A nice coffee table, pick it up, read it for a little bit, put it back down.
Yeah, well, that does sound interesting. I have Atlas Obscura right on my shelf here at WITF. We get ideas for shows from time to time, but sounds like we get some ideas for food as well. So thank you for that. All right, when the three of you send your list of recommended books to us, I always look for some, a book that is on more than one list. And you have a couple of them, the three of you, but one that I saw both Carolyn and Catherine have. Hero of Two Worlds, the Marquis de Lafayette and the Age of Revolution. Carolyn, why do you recommend this book?
Well, I am reading this one right now. I'm not done with it yet, but I found it to be a really engaging and accessible biography. The Marquis de Lafayette, he's a committed activist, caught up in political passions. There's a lot of crossover with other biographies that I've been reading, Hamilton and Washington and, other characters from that time. And so it's just interesting to see him as a soldier and a statesman, a philanthropist. It's 50 years of his life and shows how he fought courageously in the Atlantic and then how he went back to France to do what needed to be done there. And again, like I said, I'm still in the midst of reading it, so there may be more surprises. I don't know if Catherine has more she'd like to say.
Yeah, Catherine, I know this was a book that was recommended by Midtown for the last month or so.
Yes, that's right. And we've been honored to host the author. And, a biography from the era of the American Revolution is probably almost always near the top of my list. And this was this year as well. I also, Carolyn, you were talking about brewery travel. And, we do historical house travel. And if you go around, you'll see where Washington lived, but you'll also see where Lafayette visited. And so I'm really looking forward myself, too, to learn more about this this international world travel diplomat, soldier who is able to have traversed the American countryside in the early years of America, too. So it's on my own reading list as well.
19 years old when he came to America to participate in the American Revolution. Probably a lot of people don't know that. So, Travis, you had a nonfiction work as a recommendation. What about your fiction? What about what on your fiction list stands out as a recommendation?
Sure, yeah. And I hope, Catherine, you come down to York and see the Lafayette statue.
Oh, that's great. It is great.
It's a great statue. There's a bunch of fiction on here from Percival Everett, Joy Williams, their new novels, and Maurice Carlos Ruffin from New Orleans, a new voice coming out of New Orleans. But I think if I was going to kind of highlight something that's being talked about a lot right now, it's a new novel, Bewilderment, by Richard Powers. So Richard Powers is inarguably a great American novelist. He writes these big, almost doorstop novels covering everything from personal relationships to science to deep history to contemporary culture across the globe. His last big book, and all his books are fairly big, was The Overstory, which is about trees and what little we know about them and our relationship to them and saving them, protecting them and these sort of things. And it was on a lot of like best of lists, such as like President Obama's books he loved reading and whatnot. And Oprah said of Richard Powers around that time, Overstory came out, he's one of our country's greatest living writers. He composes some of the most beautiful sentences I've ever read. I'm in awe of his talent, which I highlight because if you think about recommending this to somebody, he looks like some writer who's just really interested in science. He's not a science fiction writer, and I won't get to Bewilderment in a second, but he's not a science fiction writer, but he's a writer who's very interested in science. So all the science in his books are usually about science that the world is working on, such as he had a novel that came out around the time we were doing the Human Genome Project around mapping our human genome and what that does to culture and individuals. Another one about mapping the human brain. His latest one, Bewilderment, is about a father and son, an astrobiologist and his son, who I don't think is labeled in the book, but I think if you're going to label for help for conversation, he's neurodivergent on the autistic spectrum. And they're wrestling with the father doesn't want to medicate his son, and he starts giving him neurofeedback training, which is something that we actually do today. I didn't know about it until I discovered this novel, and neurofeedback training based on the wife and the child's mother that had passed away. Also, the novel explores our cosmos, if we're the only life in the galaxy or the universe, these sort of things. It's this broad kind of expanse of what it means to be human, told in 288 short pages in this novel called Bewilderment, which I'm excited to read. And I just listened to if you like podcasts, the Ezra Klein Show, which has a great conversation with Richard Powers about this book and about his writing life in general. But it sounds just like a stunning book about what it means to be human and a lovely book to read.
And it's a novel. It's fiction. So
fiction.
What you were describing.
Yeah. He looks at science and looks at kind of what it's doing to our life. Not in the Star Trek-y sort of way, but in a fictional lens, a science fictional, hard on the science part lens, to kind of try to understand what these sciences and what these technologies are doing to who we are and what it means to be human.
Hmm. Yeah. Bob from Waynesboro suggests any book by Cooper Wingert. Cooper Wingert, of course, has been on our program many times, and Catherine Lawrence has appeared at Midtown Scholar Bookstore many times. Cooper has written, I think, about a dozen books, and he's, I think, 23 years old. His first book was when he was, 10 or 11? Most of them about the Civil War era, the antebellum era, a lot of history. And yes, I would agree with Bob from Waynesboro that Cooper, a talented young man, and really a focus on central Pennsylvania during that era. Speaking of which, let's go to Phil in Carlisle. Phil, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi, Scott. I have a book to recommend that I just saw in Barnes & Noble, and I checked, and it's on Amazon. I bought a copy of it and read the first 50 pages of it, and I think it's really terrific. It's called Myths of the Civil War. Scott Hippenstill grew up in Mechanicsburg and graduated from Cumberland Valley High School. Excuse me, and he's now a professor in the South. He takes a lot of the stories that we hear about the Civil War and a lot of the photographs you see in the Civil War and uses science to show that most of them, 90% of them, could not possibly have happened. As a simple example, that supposedly the officers that were shot on Little Round Top with the ballistics of the rifles of that day, it was virtually impossible for that to happen unless the shooter shot 18 feet over the target to try to hit it. So it's quite an interesting book. I've read 50 pages so far, and I find it quite fascinating as a Civil War buff myself.
Huh. Phil, thank you very much for your call. Catherine, those Civil War books, that era of history is very, very popular in this region, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I feel that I ought to have had such a book on my list. And my Civil War book is actually another American Revolution title of our first Civil War, Patriots and Loyalists in the American Revolution by H.W. Brands. But it gets at the same issues. And I think that not the issues of military sort of alternate pathways and such, but of the contest that, you know, the divisions that often rive America. And yes, a great topic for book giving every year, history, absolutely.
Okay, who has, because it is for gift giving, who has a children's book on their list or multiple children's book? Carolyn, I see you raising your hand in our Zoom meeting here. Carolyn, children's book recommendations.
Yeah, I have three of them on my list. The first one, called Construction Site, Merry and Bright. It's just a board book. It's perfect for really little children who are just learning to, to flip those sturdy flaps and see what's underneath to reveal surprises. So it's just it's a heartwarming story where they use rhyming text for the trucks to decorate a construction site for Christmas. And so it'll just keep the kids involved and loving that. It's like done in wax color art. It's really a beautiful, beautiful book. And then Sandra Boynton just came out with a new book called Woodland Dance. And so she's, again, always fun for the little ones and also the big ones who have enjoyed her books over the years. If you think of her best-selling Barnyard Dance, it's got a lot of those same characters, those dancing animals, but it's destined to be a read-aloud favorite for parents and children. as the woodland animals heed the call of the fox's bugle to come out and join the dance. And so we see the bears, the foxes, squirrels, beavers, rabbits, and such. And then for a little bit older children, maybe 3 to 8 years old, Carla and the Christmas Cornbread is one that I recommend. I saw this one on TV and have been looking to see if it's in our libraries. Carla Hall is the author. She's a celebrity chef, and she kicked off the holiday season this year on The View by showing off this book. And so she has written several cookbooks about soul food, and this is her first children's book, and it's loosely based on her childhood growing up in Nashville, Tennessee. She had a story that she shared about how she ate a sugar cookie meant for Santa on the night before Christmas and all the things she did to make it right. But again, there might be a little bit of a theme going through my books here with food.
It made
me hungry to start baking for the holiday season, just reading about Carla and the Christmas Cornbread. And so I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of that.
Catherine, children's books?
Yes. Oh, I've got a couple here. Bear is a Bear by Jonathan Stutzman, a gorgeous classic gift book about the enduring love between a little girl and her childhood friend Bear, by the popular author Anna Caldicott, winning illustrator as well. And then also Amanda Gorman, Change Scenes, picture book by the presidential inaugural poet and activist Amanda Gorman that shows anything is possible when our voices join together. A young girl leads a cast of characters on a musical journey, and they find they can make changes big and small in their world, in their communities and neighborhoods, and then in themselves. And I'll pick a book from Carolyn's list as well. For middle grade readers, she recommends, and I would absolutely agree, Gary Paulson's, what's going to be his final novel since sadly we lost him this year, North Wind. And he's just a terrific author for adventuresome stories. And this one is about an orphan named Leaf who flees north in a cedar canoe and then has a very kind of challenging journey that he undergoes, and just classic Gary Paulson story that would be great for any kind of middle grade, early emerging reader on your list.
Oh, well, that's good. Travis, you don't have any children's books on your list, but I know that one of the things that you do when we talk is books that you will purchase for your daughters or read with your daughters. Any that you would recommend right now?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, because my oldest daughter, who, speaking of Sandra Boynton, with the animals book that Carolyn mentioned, I used to read the Going to Bed book with her. And now she's graduating from college and applying to law school. So I think I would read kind of a lot of these books with her. I don't think my youngest is 11. I'm not sure Zoe would be on board with a lot of these. But one, to kind of half answer your question, Scott, that I think my daughters would connect with, but it's also about an author connecting with his child. And also it's sort of like a kid's book. It's this book that has recently just come out called All the Marvels, A Journey to the Ends of the Biggest Story Ever Told. And this is by Douglas Wolk, who is a writer I admire a lot. He's one of the finest writers on comic books and superheroes in the country. He came out with a book maybe 10 years ago called Reading Comics, which I used a bunch in my own comics classes at York College of Pennsylvania. And also, I liked him so much when I put together a book about publishing, asked him to write an essay back in 2016 for Literary Publishing the 21st Century for Milkweed Books. And he wrote about comic book publishing. But this book actually emerged from reading 27,000 Marvel comics, half a million pages of Marvel comics, what he calls the longest story ever told in fiction, and I think probably in nonfiction too. This emerged from, I think, a decade ago or so, maybe 5 years ago, I don't remember exactly, when his own son, Douglas Wolk's own son, said he started to want to read the comics from Marvel in sequential order. And Douglas was like, well, you're going to get tired of this really soon, son. And his son didn't. And they started reading these comics sequentially from 1961 forward together. And that spurred Douglas to both connect I think reading is a way to connect with your children, which you're mentioning, Scott, is something I do with my children a lot. Connect with people, sharing stories, kind of sharing the experience of reading is a really important part of life and, of course, a part of parenting. And doing this with his son was really, really meaningful to Douglas. And then it continued his path as a scholar and a lover of the genre and the form of comic books, and then continue reading the next 27,000 comics from Marvel. So he read all the Marvel comics from 1961 till the day, and he coalesces that into a book called All the Marvels, looking at connections across those stories, sometimes kind of negative stereotypes, but also kind of positive connections to our culture and his own life. And he really kind of synthesizes the whole thing in something like 384 page book.
That's good to say.
To kind of look broadly at what really is probably the largest and longest continuing story ever told by humans, at least written down and printed.
Yeah, I was going to mention, because you mentioned in your list that it's 384 pages, but that is incredible. Half a million. I mean, that's just incredible. Let's take a phone call from Kathy in Campbelltown. Kathy, you're on Smart Talk.
Good morning. I always enjoy this show. I'm so glad I caught it today. To follow up on the book about Lafayette that was mentioned, I would recommend Travels with George by Nathaniel Philbrick, and kind of related with Another President, Lincoln on the Verge by Edward, and I'm blanking on the pronunciation of his last name, so I won't even try it. So both about presidential journeys, one prior to Lincoln, prior to his becoming prior to becoming president, and George Washington just after his becoming president.
Well, I will tell you, as a bit of a promo here, we have Nathaniel Philbrook scheduled on Smart Talk to talk about Travels with George. So that's coming up.
Great.
Yeah, that's coming up within the next month. And I also have to tell you, Kathy, I'm going to Ford's Theater in Washington early next month, in just a couple weeks, to see A Christmas Carol. And of course, right across the street, any book about Lincoln known to mankind is across the street. So I'll have to see if I can pick that one up as well. But thank you very much for your recommendations. Catherine, is Nathaniel Philbrook? Okay, I'm putting you on the spot here. Is he part of, is he doing anything with the book?
We take a brief, basically, we have two more authors coming up in December. Michael Nyberg, who is a Carlisle Army War College professor, talking about his book, When France Fell, and then another memoir, An Evening with Brené Brown, in the first week of December. And then we take a hiatus. So unfortunately, we're not having stream discussion. So attend to Scott and Smart Talk's interview with Nathaniel Philbrook, which I'm sure will be fascinating. We are hoping to return to in-person author talks in the new year. So we're working to gear that up once authors start, you know, going on physical book tours again. So
wouldn't
I'm glad
to hear
Ford's Theater is open for physical performances again. It's nice to have the world opening up again in this way.
Yeah, that, I mean, really looking forward to being able to do that in person again. Let's go to Cynthia in Boiling Springs. Cynthia, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have two recommendations. One is, it came out in paperback recently, and we did buy it at Midtown, Hamnet by Maggie Farrell. And with many people going through grief during this time, of COVID, this story is the reimagining of Shakespeare's son, Hamnet, who died at about 11, and the family's grief journey. It's beautifully written by Maggie Farrell. I loved it, and my sisters are reading it, and they love it too. And for children, this has been out for a while, The Story of Ruby Bridges by Robert Coles, and it is such a beautiful book. It shows, of course, the cruelty of racism and the courage of this little girl who helped integrate a school, and the kindness of some of the people who were there with her. And ultimately, it's a very encouraging story. I heard that one group was trying to ban it from the schools in Tennessee, and I thought, whoa, really? This is such a beautiful, encouraging story. And, you know, children, I know when I was a child, I wanted to know what was right and wrong, and so this book shows what what kindness and what cruelty are.
Yeah.
And what courage is. And the story of Ruby was so courageous. And she's still alive and she's still encouraging people. Yeah, so thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for those recommendations. And those are two great recommendations for books. But the Ruby Bridges book in particular, you see that iconic photograph of Ruby Bridges. And for many people, that photograph leads people to want to learn more about her. We got several emails here that I want to get to. Jim in Blainsport says, I just began reading Blood and Treasure by Bob Drury and Tom Clavin. Says, you interviewed one of them recently. I did. Bob Drury in particular. He says, I'm a hunter, history buff, and reenactor. I love this book. And for any boomer who fell in love with Fess Parker's Daniel Boone, it's a must read. Love Drury's expansive vocabulary and writing style. That is about Daniel Boone, a native Pennsylvanian. Let's see, who else do we have here? Jessica says, here's my recommendations. Highly Political, A Thousand Splendid Sons by Khaled Hosseini, an Afghan-American novelist, recounts the condition of women under the Taliban in the 1990s. Feminist novels, an older one, Circe and the Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. The Penelopian by Margaret Atwood shows Odysseus' wife Penelope as the queen and leader of a world that ended with the Trojan Wars, and The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker. So she has a whole, Jessica has a whole list there. Let's see who else we have. Let's see, Deborah. And if it seems like I'm taking time, yeah, we got multiple emails, so I'm looking through here carefully. I know I'd recommend this book every year to your program, but we really need to keep hearing its message. It's Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. I suggest looking for the original manuscript edition published in association with the Morgan Library and Museum in 2017. Catherine, you have a lot of old and classic books in the bookstore. Do you have original manuscript of A Christmas Carol?
We have lots of interesting Dickens books. So we have, 19th century editions that were sort of within Dickens' lifetime. And then we have, there are some great kind of gift quality new editions, as the writer was describing to you in the email, that basically have the story, but then interleave pages of the manuscript or pictures or, the history of, Christmas puddings interleaved in the story of the Christmas Carol itself. So lots of great versions of that book are in print. And yes, it's one of, probably got a great Dickens shelf of collections, old and new books of that.
Well, that's good. Travis, a nonfiction book you have, and just the title alone makes me curious. This is Your Mind on Plants by Michael Pollan. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, I think many people are probably aware of Michael Pollan's books and his writing on food. His big bestseller was In Defense of Food, but it's also Omnivore's Dilemma. And he has that catchphrase slogan that was around a lot for the past decade that sort of like simplified his ideas about food, which is eat food, not too much, mostly plants. He writes for The New Yorker. He writes in The New York Times. He's a journalist and nonfiction writer. And he's just a lovely, lovely man. And one of the kind of best, I think, nonfiction writers on plants and food that we have. His book that I'm continuing to finish right now came out about 2 years ago, and it's called How to Change Your Mind. And that was about the research that we've done on psychedelic drugs in the United States, both in the 1950s and 60s, and then again today since the 1990s and on today. And it's mind blowing. It's for lack of a better pun to use about a book about psychedelics. It's a great book, but this is sort of his latest book, kind of in this vein, that's sort of been his whole career about our relationship to plants. This is Your Mind on Plants. And it's kind of a follow-up to an audiobook he did with Audible, which is Amazon's audiobook platform, which is just about caffeine, which I listened to and loved. If you want to know more about your relationship with caffeine and coffee, definitely check out this audiobook from Michael Pollan. But this is Your Mind on Plants covers kind of three symbiotic or kind of really close relationship we have with plants based on ingesting them. And it's opium, caffeine, and mescaline. And he carries those narratives through both personally and as a journalist through this book. Again, I haven't read this one yet. I'm finishing his last book and read the caffeine book through my ears, but I'm really excited to check out This Is Your Mind on Plants, because Michael Pollan's just one of the most fantastic nonfiction writers, and especially on the subjects of plants and our relationship to them.
Carolyn, you sent a last-minute note this morning. I can tell you were in a panic because you wanted to make sure that this got on the air, but up to heaven and down to hell, Fracking Freedom and Community in an American Town by Colin Jeromack. Tell us about that day you wanted to make sure that you got on the air.
Yeah, I had a dinner with my family yesterday, and we started talking about this book. We actually went as a family to up to Williamsport to hear the author, sponsored by their local PBS station, Colin Jeromack. He's a professor of sociology and environmental studies at New York University, and he took some time off to about 8 months to live in Williamsport and study fracking. And in the United States, just to speak to the title, in the United States, we're the only country in the world where property rights commonly extend up to heaven and down to hell. So that's where he got that title from. So that means the landowners have exclusive rights to lease their subsurface mineral estates and to petroleum companies, which you know has been, you know, happening a lot in Pennsylvania. And this book is not political. He's a sociologist, so he takes it from that point of view. It's a deeply intimate book where he reveals how that decision is made by the leaseholders. It brings in, you know, financial rewards, but also could cause irreparable harm to neighbors because of communal resources like air and water and noise pollution, and even to oneself. So he spent time with the people and he built relationships with the people. And when we went to this talk, the people came from both sides, not to debate, but because they were part of the experience. And it's just a really neat way of looking at the Marcellus shale industry, but specifically in Lycoming County, where they have over 84 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, 832 wells, and what that has done to the people and to the relationships. And so, again, we just had quite a conversation about that, and it really became a family outing for us. And another one I wanted to speak to that's also nonfiction, when I was thinking my family, I hope my sister's not listening because I'm thinking this may be her gift. So
you should told under relatives Jerusalem, not to
the
listen.
Very history of the world's most contested city. And so it starts in the 1860s with a French adventurer who dug up what he proclaimed to be the Old Testament queen. And it goes on into modern history with Jews and Muslims and their reaction to what meets them beneath that city. And so two really good nonfiction recommendations.
Well, I have to say that I don't know if you heard me, Carolyn, but you probably should have told relatives and family members not to listen today. And Catherine, Travis, same goes for you. But I'm also I find it fascinating that you and the family are talking about books. I'm assuming that the three of you are also do that, where you're talking about books over the dinner table or at holiday meals as well. So that's kind of cool. But I want to, Catherine Lawrence, there's one here that you have listed under romance. And the title, again, kind of intrigues me. Wild Women, Women Who Dare. Now, if it was under political or something like that, I'd like, oh, okay, I think I knew where you come up. But this is under romance. What's going on?
Well, Woman to Dare is a series title. This is by Beverly Jenkins, who's one of the sort of Joannes of modern romance, one of the first leading African-American authors who's won many, many awards, top in the field. And this is her latest book of 2021 and part of this new series, Women Who Dare. And she really has always, since she began publishing in the 90s, has taken stories that you might not expect and turned them into romances that are riveting and have characters who are developing, usually sort of two protagonists, in this case, a man and a woman, who are each of them on their own journeys and meet together. And then will they continue on together is sort of the question of the story. And this one has a reporter, a Black reporter, who goes to Wyoming to do a story on doctors for the Black newspaper back east for which he works. And he thinks that that a particular doctor will be a good subject for him, but then he meets Dr. Sister, who is a ranch owner and working to save the ranch. And that's the setup for a great story. You have to realize, you know, you've got this sort of intellectual journalist from back east who arrives, you know, with fancy shoes and fancy clothes in the middle of a blizzard. And luckily there's a woman on horseback who rides with her carriage to pick him up and save him from freezing in the Wyoming wilderness. So that's probably not what you would expect as a setup for, you know, a romance, but actually it's a great testament. And I think it speaks to, in the same way that Travis's science fiction picks really also integrate with, you know, contemporary society, the historical fiction does the same. And so the characters that you read, if you read really any contemporary writer's historical fiction, whether it's romantic historical fiction or a different title that might be on Carolyn or mine's list, those historical stories are going to have, are going to resonate. The authors are trying to have the stories resonate with the modern day and not just be back in the past, but bringing those stories and voices into the present. And this is certainly one that does it.
That's interesting. But the books from the past, we've often talked about classics as well. We have a lot of recommendations from listeners today, and I'm going to try to get to as many as I can. Who's this from? I'm looking for a name here. I don't see it right now. But anyway, Nutcracker. Marie Sandek's Nutcracker, she's giving to her 12-year-old granddaughter. Picked it up at a library fundraiser, by the way. And Tales of King Arthur from my 10-year-old grandson. It's 30-plus years old and belonged to his late father. And a couple things there. First of all, a couple great stories. Secondly, a book that belonged to her late father. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that you can hand down to family members as books. Let's see, who else do we have here? Dolly from Mount Pleasant, Being American in the World We Made by Ben Rhodes. Martin, Books for Dog Lovers, Dog Tripping, 25 rescues, 11 volunteers, and 3 RVs on our canine cross-country adventure. Rescued dogs from California to Maine. And also a book called Lessons from Tara, who is a golden retriever. A short story of rescues. And let's see, The Chet and Bernie Mystery Series by Spencer Quinn, told by Chet the dog. First book is Dog on It. That's Dog on It, not Doggone It. Matt, for Musicians, The Music Lesson by Victor Wooten. Great alternative perspective to music by a contemporary genius. And Michael says, I'd like to recommend that readers who want to learn more about sources of some of the misrepresentations of Southern beliefs and cultures still prevalent today after the end of the U.S. Civil War should read White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity by Robert P. Jones, a former Southern Baptist pastor. He presents a cogent analysis of the unfortunate symbiotic relationship between Christianity and America with many of the tenets of white supremacy. So there you go. Oh, and Travis, one for you in particular. And the reason I say that is because I think this is a former student of yours, Mackenzie, who is listening at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, and she has a children's book. First of all, I'm just impressed that she's listening in Scotland. What are they, 5 hours ahead of us right now? So it's in the middle of the afternoon for her. Grumpy Monkey, Oh No, Christmas for Kids. My cousin is 4 and loves the Grumpy Monkey series. And she says, P.S., hi, Trav. So was Mackenzie a student of yours?
Yeah, I mean, I knew Mackenzie during her time at York College, and I've been following on social media. Mackenzie has recently started graduate school over there, so it's really, really good. It's quite a pick.
Did you turn her on to the Grumpy Monkey series, or was that just one she picked up on her own?
I'm sure I can't take credit. I would probably blame Dr. Weiss for that. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I would love to take credit.
Carolyn, Grumpy Monkey series at the library.
I know. I just looked it up. We don't own Grumpy Monkey Oh No Christmas, but we own a couple of the Grumpy Monkeys. So I'm going to be suggesting that people buy that one for our collection.
Okay, Catherine, what about Grumpy Monkeys?
Oh, I'm sorry that I don't know offhand, but it sounds great.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a series, so and anytime you can get a grumpy monkey into, there's nothing funnier than a monkey in clothes, and if one's grumpy, then just
hilarious.
Think about that. Yeah, that's classic comedy right there. We only have a minute or so left. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. If you could, in 90 seconds or less, one more recommendation, Carolyn.
Oh, my Christmas recommendation is Once Upon a Wardrobe. It's a must-read book for fans of C.S. Lewis, people who enjoy the Chronicles of Narnia. This will give you a whole new perspective. It is fiction, but it will... just give you insight to how the book was written. And it's a heartwarming tale about the transformative power of books and just a nice Christmas read.
Travis, about 30 seconds.
Sure. Yeah. I'd be remiss, as I say, if I didn't mention a book that's not on my list. I left it off my list because I wasn't sure it was going to be a massively great book. And it really is now that I've actually picked it up. It's the 1619 Project, edited by Nicole Hannah-Jones. It's an expansion of the New York Times Magazine issue on 1619 as the origins of, in some way, the American Project, the origins of slavery in the United States. And I went to a bookstore with my girlfriend yesterday. I'm here in Philadelphia. We're wandering on Girard Street over in Fishtown and stumbled upon a bookstore called Harriet's, named after Harriet Tubman. And one, do check it out. It is one of the most interesting and evocative and powerful bookstore experiences I've had. But two, in there, I found and picked up finally 1619 Project. And it is a massively good book. It's also a massive book coming in over 450 pages, I think. But it's wonderfully expansive on the history that the 1619 Project covers, the Black experience in America throughout those 400 years. And it is cheek to jowl stuffed with poetry and short fiction and nonfiction from the best writers.
Travis, I have to interrupt. Catherine, I know you have 1619 Project on your list as well. Hey,
yes,
I want
to suggest to you too, because okay. it goes beyond if you've read it.
Now, I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.